So Salah has just scored a brace against West Ham. I captained him. I'm smug. Joel's done terribly. Normality is resumed on Midnight FPL. We'll be discussing the midweek fixtures, the week after, what to do with your team going forward, and as always, so much more. So, Joel, three-word review for this game week.
Really, really bad.
We've done that one before. Sam, what about you?
FPL is frustrating.
Nice. Abbreviations are a good way to get around it. I'll go with very, very good. Joel, do you want to talk us through your team? I'll have a look at it now. It always gives me a chuckle.
Yeah, I mean, I had two free transfers going into this week. Bought in Calvert-Lewin and Barnes. Was like, I'm just going to captain Calvert-Lewin. Just had a good feeling, like, home to Newcastle. Newcastle been poor recently. I don't know. I just had a good feeling about, had a really good feeling about this week. A really good feeling. And it couldn't really have gone much worse, to be honest. So yeah,
quack, quack, quack.
yeah. It's, I think that summarizes it quite well, to be honest. Yeah, just awful. And my head scrambled. I have no idea what to do. I'm just in a bit of trouble at the moment.
I think it sounds so deep.
It is so deep. It hurts.
Sam,
I just want to say that. Every time I take a -4, my week is shit. And I've taken a lot of -4s lately and I've been doing really badly. I didn't take a -4 this week. I just brought in Grealish. Nice, easy substitution. Nice little 6-pointer. Love it. 70 points overall. Not too bad. It's just frustrating that I didn't captain Salah. He's just the obvious person to captain. But he hasn't done well for so many weeks. You just think, is there even any point anymore? So you go with Madison and you're like, just give someone else a go. He gets 10 points for me, and Salah would have got me what looks like being 30 points. So it's a bit disappointing in that respect. But my piece of advice for fantasy players is just don't let fantasy get to you that much, because then you'll get like Joel and you'll cry and stuff like that. And it's just not worth it. Just have other things going in your life.
I do have other things going in my life. But yeah, no, it's been a tough day.
Right, so I got 85, and Sam messaged me being like, is it idiotic to go Madison or should I just go Salah? And I said, if in doubt, always go Madison. And the thing with Mo Salah is it just vindicates the notion that you should watch games in order to make decisions. If you watch the FA Cup game and you watch the game against Tottenham, you'll see that he is actually back to his best, but he just wasn't quite delivering yet, so that's why I went for him, where he looked flat. In other games, like the one against Fulham, he looks like he's feeling clear back to his death. So I was happy with that. And then, obviously, as Sam said, never take -4, because if you don't do anything, you'll be cheap transfers and you don't, like, it's not as frustrating as... Anyway, I bought in Cancelo, 0. Luckily, Dallas will replace him. And I bought in Dominic Calvert-Lewin, he got 2. So transfers were bad, but everything else was good. And Martinez is just... I mean, how you don't own him, Joel? He's just the saviour every week.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of like, it's getting to the point where it's like, I don't own him out of principle, which is like, it's not how fantasy works.
You do this with loads of players, like Bamford, KDB, Martinez. Like everyone owns them because they get loads of points. And you just, for some reason, do these like silent protests. And then your team...
Yeah, well, no, it's because I don't like the fact that Martinez started off as 4.5 and now, what is he, like 5.2, 5.1? And I was just like, I hate the idea of having to pay 5 point whatever for a keeper that was owned for 4.5. But it's stupid because he gets like 10 pointers every week and I'm still doing rubbish. So maybe I should not listen to myself.
Okay, so we'll look ahead to the next game week. So the next game week starts Tuesday because this assault of fixtures carries on. I want to know, lads, are you going to be captaining Salah at home to Brighton? Or Fernandes at home to Southampton, maybe?
I mean, I know Salah's done well today, but I think Brighton have looked pretty solid in the last 2 or 3 game weeks. And I just don't feel it. I know Salah's played well, but Liverpool aren't playing well. And I agree with Joel in the sense that, like, when a team's playing well, that's a good indication of who to bring into your fantasy team and who to captain. You want to captain players and teams that are playing well. And I just can't imagine. I don't think Liverpool played that well today, if I'm honest.
Yeah, they didn't, but they won 3-0 and they beat Tottenham 3-1. So I think they are starting to play it. They beat Bright. They usually, I don't know, I've got a memory of Salah getting loads of points.
I don't know. I'm just not backing Salah. I'm thinking maybe Grealish. West Ham and Aston Villa, I think, will go at each other. I think those sorts of games where you've got two arrogant teams who think they can beat each other and they're both evenly matched, a good game to captain players from. So
remember earlier in the podcast where you said, I should have just gone Salah. I regret not going Salah, and you're just going to rinse.
I know, but you can't ignore the fact that, I mean, before this game, he's got 2-1, 3-2, 3-2 before a 16 before that. It's just so unreliable. It genuinely is like captaining a defender who might just get a goal and get a 16-pointer and an assist, a goal and a clean sheet and get a decent haul of points. But apart from that, has done shit all season. That's what Salah's
got 143
like right
points.
Now.
Salah's the second highest scorer to Bruno Fernandes.
But if we talk about form,
he got COVID, I think, and then came back and wasn't, and now he's back to his best.
But I also do think Liverpool, like the point that Sam made, Liverpool aren't playing that well. Like, there's no doubt that Salah is a class finisher and he's always got it in his locker to score out of nowhere. But it's not as simple as it has been previously when you're like, Liverpool are on fire, let's captain Salah. Because Liverpool will play well and Salah will do well. It now, Liverpool are way more reliant on Salah playing well for them. And I just don't think, like, I think I will probably captain Salah, but I just don't think it's as an easy decision as it used to be just because Liverpool aren't playing as well. But having said that, like, Salah could easily just grab a goal out of nowhere. So.
You know what? I said all that, but I almost certainly will captain Salah just because everyone will and you can't afford to lose that much ground. And it does look good on paper. So I probably will captain him. But I just sort of wanted to express my feelings about Salah, and I don't think he's necessarily what everyone thought he was this time last year.
But this is the thing. The problem recently is that all the most popular captain choices have gone really badly. So this week, everyone's like, I'm going to go off the kind of like off the beaten track a bit, go with someone a bit rogue. And like I went for like Calvert-Lewin and that didn't pay off. And now Salah's returned. So it's kind of like everyone's kind of going back on what they were saying just a week ago. So it's kind of...
The whole point was this week, there wasn't a clear-cut fixture. Yeah. And because KDB's out, they couldn't take the Sheffield United at home game. But you're just I think you're overthinking it if you don't captain Salah.
Yeah.
The other one is Bruno, because Southampton, I think, will come at United and therefore there might be space. But he's looking really bad.
I also think Southampton have been quite poor recently. They were doing quite well at the beginning of the season, but they're not doing so well anymore. They've kind of had a few bad results. So
you're absolutely robbed on a Saturday night.
But United are also have been a bit poor lately. So I don't know, like United aren't exactly in form. The last two games haven't been great. So like Liverpool coming off a 3-1 win where Salah scored twice, I think it's probably leaning towards Salah over Fernandes.
Cool. All right. That's enough of that. Captain Salah. The City boys, the City defenders are Burnley away as well. You'd hope could be a clean sheet there because they look really tame against Chelsea, Burnley.
Going
forward, they don't have anything. And is Wood how?
Yeah, Wood looked hurt, didn't he? It looked quite serious.
But he went off injured as well. If Burnley don't have Barnes and Wood, then they've got like Vidra and Rodriguez, which didn't say much. So
yeah, Rodriguez banged Fulham in the cup, but
yeah. Assuming Pep doesn't kind of like ruin it again for us is kind of good to assume. City defenders are a pretty safe option, but I've been having this thought actually. Everyone's like, oh, like what defender is kind of set for City? Surely the only defender that is set a certain start for City is Edison, and no one ever talks about him.
Well, I said Edison weeks ago, and you all told me it was rubbish out. But one Edison,
you know why
saved,
that's
so
you know why that's
six.
Not that's not a good shout because of Martinez. He's such good value and he gets unbelievable number of points. You may as well just go with Diaz, who's almost always certain.
Yeah, interesting.
Bring in Edison, Joel. Go for it.
Yeah.
Could be the turning point.
Joel, can you just get your keeper right and just bring in Martinez? Can you just do that?
But this is why I want to bring Target in, because I need some Villa cover. Because if I have Target, he gets a clean sheet. It's not so bad when Martinez gets.
Even Martinez is actually an elite level keeper. So like he makes, like, he's the reason that Villa keep loads of clean sheets, because they actually concede loads of chances. That's why he gets these big hauls, because he gets those.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, should we wrap that up and then move onto our differentials in the next bit?
Yeah.
Cracking. All right, so the change-up format, the differential has to be below 5% ownership for this week, because we've not got a podcast between game week 22 and game week 23. We'll be doing our choices for the next 2 weeks, but either way, it should always be a long-term option. Why would you bring them in? Joel, who are you going for this week?
I'm going slightly rogue this week. I mean, I guess that is the point of differentials. But yeah, anyway, he's just back, kind of just about back from injuries. It's Alex Saint-Maximin from Newcastle. Newcastle, I know they've been poor recently, but even when they lost to Leeds and against Everton, I feel like Bruce has finally worked out the best way to play his team. And with Maximin coming back from injury as well, he kind of really offers them something going forward, especially on the counter-attack. You've got Wilson firing up.
He had COVID, wasn't it? He had long COVID.
Yeah. Well, whatever. He was out for a bit. But now he's back, Newcastle playing well. I think he's got something to offer. He's valued at 5.1, which is super cheap. He's got Palace and Southampton at home the next two game weeks. So I think if you're looking for a cheap, super attacking option with a team who might be getting back in form, then I think he's a good one. And he's only owned at he's super low ownership. He's only 2.4%. So
2.4% is even pretty high for someone who's. But the thing is, you and Sam have both done suggestions, and we preemptively criticised Sam's, where if you wanted a budget midfielder of 5-odd, you would go Saka, Gundogan or Suchet, because they're all delivering the goods. And I don't know why you would punt on Alex.
Well, this is the nature of differentials, isn't it? Everyone has Suchet, so that's why you bring in Saint-Maximin, because you want to catch up. That's the point of a differential.
Yeah, they're no longer differentials anymore. But also, I think, like, with my problem with Suchet and Gundogan, and this doesn't really stand because they have consistently been getting points, but if I had players in my team, I'd always rather attacking players rather than kind of slightly players who are deeper, who play slightly deeper. And I know it doesn't really stand when they do get points, but I just think he's an exciting player going forward, and 5.1 is super, super cheap. So I think you might be worth a punt if you're looking for someone, or if you've kind of had a 4.5 midfielder on your bench, you've got a bit of cash, you want to have a few more midfielders in the team. If you want to play 5 midfielders, then you could upgrade your 4.5 that doesn't play at all into Saint-Maximin. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
Sam, gonna fire over yours. I like the player you've gone for.
I think this is way better than Saint-Maximin. I think Saint-Maximin's dogs. He's been dogs all season. Even when he's going through a good run of form, he still barely gets any stats. He barely gets any goals, barely gets any assists, even when he's playing well. Eze is my guy.
Who's your guy then?
Eze. Eberechi Eze. He's got Newcastle, Leeds, Burnley, Brighton, Fulham.
Yeah, their fixtures are unreal, Palace.
All in a row. So not only is he good for the next couple of game weeks, like Louis said, is the aim of this particular differential, but he's one to hang around in your team for a bit. You won't need to get rid of him if he's not playing, if he's not getting points immediately for you, because he's got a good run of fixtures. He's also a great player. When I watch him, he passes the eye test, as Louis would say, and has scored a couple of really great goals this season and gets in some good attacking positions and takes free kicks. So, Eze. And also, he's 0.8% ownership at 5.8 mil.
Yeah, I think that trumps my St. Maximin choice by quite a lot.
The thing with St. Maximin, it's because we post these on Twitter now, like, our credibility when we post bringing Alan St. Maximin looks so ridiculous. Anyway.
I'll have to bite the bullet on that one.
I've gone for a really dull one, but one that I think is practical. I've gone for Antonio Rudiger, just because he's priced at 4.5, and I think that was obviously on the basis that they didn't think he was going to play. If you've got a regular Chelsea defender in a team that looks relatively solid in that back five, albeit against bad teams, and they've got Tottenham away, fine, he won't get a clean sheet there, might because Kane's not playing. But then Sheffield United away, Newcastle at home, there's some good fixtures. He could pop up with a header, but realistically, it's just like quite a nice 4.5 to have, I reckon.
Yeah, I personally, as a Chelsea fan, think Zouma should play over him, but it doesn't seem that way.
That's the point I was going to make, that he plays a back three, and I think Azpilicueta and Thiago Silva are pretty nailed every week. So I think it will be between Rudiger and Zouma. And Zouma, I think, is just obviously a better player. And when Tuchel spends more time around the dressing room, watches them play more, I think he'll get to understand that. And I think Zouma will come back into the team.
Yeah, I agree.
I was so close to going Marcus Alonso just on reaction, because if he plays as a wing back and he starts, he is so... Does anyone remember in the seasons, like, under Conte, he played left wing back? I mean, he was getting so many points. He's basically like having a striker at defender. But
also, like, he hasn't played since the West Brom game, and he came back and slotted right in and scored a goal as if he'd kind of been playing for most of the season.
He's just a wing back, isn't he? And then Lampard played him at left back, and he's just uniquely suited to playing left wing back. But yeah. So I would like the Marcus Alonso because it's more of a flashy pick. But then realistically, I wouldn't recommend someone putting 5.6 into Alonso because he will just get rotated with Joel. So it's not worth it. So Rudiger's my pick, but yeah, not too excited about that. All right, join us in the last part of this podcast where we're going to be answering your questions. So for part three, we're going to be answering your questions, which you tweeted in. As always, we get absolutely bombarded with them, so we can only answer a few because there's loads to wade through, and we didn't message mates and ask them. So the first question we've got is from Toby, he's a real friend of the podcast. He said, is it worth leaving Bamford as the only striker and having an extra defender while Kane and Vardy are out? So strikers generally have been quite underwhelming this year. What do you guys think?
I think definitely. I think that is just everything that I've been thinking over the last day. I think, I just think you've got to double up on City defenders, so that takes a bit out of your budget. I think in general, you'd rather have people like Salah, Fernandes, Son, instead of, I mean, what even are your options in the striking department? Okay, maybe Danny Ings. I'd make an exception for him because he's got Newcastle away.
8.5, though. Like, as you say, go for players on teams who are doing well, and Southampton just aren't playing well at me.
Yeah, but I'd say to that if you're getting rid of Kane, then you're going from 11.1 down to 8.4 with Danny Ings. That still leaves you quite a lot in the bank. And Danny Ings is playing Newcastle away and then Wolves at home in the game after the United game. And those, at the moment, are two of the easiest fixtures in the league. And Man United just look a bit rocky at the moment as well. So I think Danny Ings is actually quite a good shout. Apart from that, in the striking department, I really don't like a lot of it. I know you both brought in Calvert-Lewin, but I just think Calvert-Lewin, when he's played well, doesn't get more than 10 points, as we've seen this season. So I'm not sure if he's worth it. Maybe Callum Wilson might be about to hit form. He's got Palace home and Southampton home. Maybe
he was
have
class
a...
as well. You need to one apologise. If you've got any Newcastle fans listening, they must despise you because you slate him.
No. I won't apologise because he's been terrible in every game that I've watched. And if he played well today, then fair play. The last one I'd say is Ollie Watkins looks like he's starting to hit form. And West Ham home, Arsenal home, then Brighton home could be better, but they're not awful fixtures. And Villa play
and
really well
to
at the
play
moment.
With Jack Grealish as well. Exactly. So like, even if it's just a luxury, he gets so many chances.
Yeah.
The thing I would say to Toby's question, which is, should you bench if Kane and Vardy are out for 2-3 game weeks, you shouldn't have 10.5 worth of striker tied up on your bench or 11. You should use that money to go and make to bring in Cancelo or to bring in.
The only thing I'd say is that I think people are making transfers every week at the moment because there's a lot of uncertainty and lots of things are changing. Players aren't playing well, which means people don't have 2-3 transfers every week. And to take out Kane and to bring in the defender, you've got to take a -4 at least. And as I said at the start of the podcast, I just think -4s are really a waste of time at the moment. If you're gonna transfer Kane out for a cheaper striker so you can get a more expensive defender, I mean, the most you can really expect a defender to get is a clean sheet. It's a real bonus if they get any more than that. But all they're going to do is match that -4. So I wouldn't recommend taking a -4 to bring in a defender. If anything, I'd bring in someone like Watkins or Ings and just leave them there and then bring in a defender the next week.
Mm. Yeah, I agree.
Joel, who's your number one striker, if you were to say, the Antonio DCLs, etc.? Who do you bring in?
I don't know, really. I think they're all on like the same like playing field, right? Like Bamford, DCL, Antonio. Is there anyone I'm missing? Like those three are kind of like, you probably wouldn't, Ollie Watkins, you probably wouldn't have all three of them. Oh yeah, Callum Wilson, you probably wouldn't have all three of them. You probably had two of them maximum because I think like they're pretty inconsistent and they're not all going to return. Like all three of them aren't going to return. So maybe with fixtures and form, maybe Wilson, but it's a tough one. I don't know. I think kind of similar to what Sam said, I wouldn't like mess around with your team too much. I think stick with the players you have at the moment, because like, I've got Calvert-Lewin and Antonio, and I'm not going to try and bring in Bamford or Wilson or anything like that. I'm just going to kind of hold with those front two and just see what happens with them, because I think they're good players. They've got decent fixtures and they might be able to nick a few points. And I think most people have a few players like that. So I just think hold on to what you've got and don't try and force it too much, because if you go chasing points, it might actually backfire a bit.
I completely agree. That's my number one tip from this week, or in general, is just like have faith in your players. You don't need to get big hauls every week. So it's like, everyone gets so pissed off when their player blanks, but then, like, for instance, like Suchek blanked on the double game week and then got 15. It's like you need to bring in players you just want to leave in your team long run, else you just end up chopping and changing so much and everything -4. You end up with the heartbreak of taking someone out who does well. Like transfers like Bamford to DCL, like sideways transfers like that. It's just like they're both good but not incredible. So they could do well one week and they could do badly another. So you just need to stick with them.
Yeah, I think a good way to articulate that is what Louis was saying to me before the podcast started. If you look at the total points at the end of the season, Bamford will be right at the top. So there's no point wasting transfers to do sideways transfers like you just said. Just bring in players that actually need replacing.
Mm, especially because there's way more injuries and there's more COVID and stuff. Not a good description. But the next question comes in from Laz FPL Joel. So I'll leave this one to you.
What a guy.
So this kind of refers to my differentials. Could Chelsea defence become a viable option? Sheffield United, Newcastle, Southampton, the three of the next four. They could get 2 clean sheets out of 4. Aspilicueta, 2.5% team selected by. Looks nailed and it's an easy downgrade from Chilwell. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think, well, we kind of spoke about it briefly with Rudiger, but I think with Tuchel coming in, Chelsea look a bit more solid. There's just kind of a bit more confidence in the back. You've got like Alonso and Aspilicueta back, who kind of obviously have all this experience. With Chilwell rested today or whatever, or just on the bench today, you might want to think about taking him out. But the only thing I would say is that it feels like Tuchel hasn't found his starting 11 yet. So I wouldn't necessarily rush to bring in these players, because I think he's just testing people out. Like you saw him bring on Reece James for Hudson-Odoi. That wasn't because Hudson-Odoi was playing badly or was a tactical decision. I just think he wanted to see how Reece James was playing. So he's someone that could feature in the next couple of weeks. Just
the only one we know who's nailed, I'd say, is Thiago Silva, because he's so good. The others, is you're right, because even the back five, so Aspilicueta's playing at the moment because he can play right centre-back well, but Tuchel in all of his previous jobs hasn't played a back five before, so just because he's done that, and he might well evolve into a 4-2-3-1, in which case Aspilicueta won't play.
Yeah.
So that's why I said Rudiger might be safer, because even if we went to a back four, he's realistically showing now that his two favourite centre-backs are Thiago Silva and Antonio Rudiger. But with anything, just you don't need to jump on bandwagons that early. It's better to just get a bit more of a case study and then make your decision.
Yeah, I think with this Chelsea team, you need to wait for the team to settle a bit more, see who Tuchel picks as his favourite 11 and then go from there. I think if you jump on too early, then it might risk of players being rotated, and you don't want to do that.
Can I add to this? Tuchel came in, has had two games since coming in. The first, he barely had any time to prepare for, so you can't say, oh, they look good under Tuchel defensively, because I can't imagine he really made much of a difference. And it was against Wolves, who barely have anything going forward at the moment. Same with Burnley, they looked absolutely dreadful. I think when you see them play Spurs, that will actually test how good they're going to be defensively under Tuchel, and then maybe make your mind up after that about Chelsea defenders. But at least for the moment, I wouldn't touch them.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Chelsea Spurs, massive game. And we'll learn a lot about how they play and who they want to play, because they can't mess around for that game. So yeah.
All right, nicely answered, I hope. So the consensus is don't rush into anything, but definitely do take out Chilwell, because I think he's going to get rotated. We've got a question from Denzel, which is, will Gundogan start in the next game or will Pep bench him? So I think we can just answer this by more widely assessing Pep roulette, and whether it's just too frustrating, I think. It's just too annoying at the moment. Especially with the Champions League coming back, they'll be rotating even more.
But this is why, this is why I think Gundogan is a good option, because he's only, and now he's 5.8 or whatever, but when he was 5.5, that's nothing, right? So even if he does get rotated, you're still not missing out on anything. When he starts getting a bit more expensive, it's kind of a bit of a trickier decision. And he was playing slightly further back this against Sheffield than he has done before. But I think for defenders is a different question. I don't know what to do about that. But I think having Gundogan in your team is not a bad option, because he can get goals. And if he is rotated, it's not the end of the world, because he's still pretty cheap. It's not like you have like 11.5 De Bruyne being rotated, which is way worse. So I think
he will be rotated for what it's worth. If you look at it, he played both games where no one else has.
Yeah.
And they've got Liverpool away on the weekend, so he realistically will want to give him a rest, because then they've got Tottenham after that and the Champions League in between, so he's surely due a rest.
Can I say he hasn't not started a game since Man United in the 12th game week, and he seems to be that sort of ever-present player in the Man City midfield. Also, you can tell that Pep really values him in the way that he's monitoring his minutes. He played 70 minutes against Palace and then only 51 against West Brom. Pep clearly wants him to play in every game, in my opinion. Like he's played 90 minutes against Sheffield United after being rested against West Brom with a clear intent to start him against Sheffield United. These aren't massive games for Man City, and they're games they should walk over. So the fact that he's resting him in order that he can start him against Sheffield United, I think says a lot about where Pep is at with Gundogan.
Yeah. He clearly loves him. It's like his spine is him and Diaz at the moment. And they're kind of the unrotatables. But you can just never bank on Pep. And the thing is, even if he does start, you know what he did to him against West Brom, where he just hooked him at 50 minutes because he wanted to rest him for the next game. That could easily happen as well. So even if he does start, I don't imagine him playing 90 minutes.
Yeah, but he hooked him against West Brom when they were like 3-0 up after 50 minutes. And you know, when you're 3-0 up, you've got a pretty good chance of being involved in one of the goals. So I don't think he would have been hooked if they weren't.
Yeah, that is true. You then benefit from the fact that...
I think the thing about Gundogan, I think the time to bring him in was 2 or 3 game weeks ago. I think if you're bringing him in now, you're just trying to like cut your losses. But I don't actually think that will necessarily benefit you.
But Joel, I don't know if I agree with that, because you can say about players like this, saying like, oh, they're hitting a purple patch, but it'll stop. But since game week 13, Gundogan's got 10-3, 11-9, 3-8, 10-14, 3. His form hasn't slowed down. Like, why wouldn't you? If he was 10 mil, if he was De Bruyne, you would bring him in right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, fair. I don't know. I have this weird. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why I think these things.
Wait, what did he hypothesise?
That you shouldn't go chasing Gundogan, and I don't know.
No, I agree. Fuck Gundogan. He's just gone through a weird purple patch, but like, he's still. And if they play a striker when Jesus and Aguero back, he won't be nearly as far forward. It's just an anomaly that. Because they weren't playing a striker, him and KDB were having to play as basically like a false nine. But that's against Sheffield United, it was so deep.
And my I think I kind of stand at the point. It's like if I'm looking to bring in someone at that price, I'd much rather a cheaper, not a cheaper, a more attacking player at that price. Like I know he's getting the points, but he's a centre mid. Like when you've got like I know Saka was out this game, but Saka and like Sam who said Eze, there's the more attacking players and. They play further up the pitch. I'm more inclined to go towards them, but that's just how I feel about it. I don't know.
So Joel's gut feeling is yeah, it's always the reverse. I wonder if anyone actually does that deliberately. Does the reverse of what you say as their tactics? Yeah, no. It would actually be so effective. Right. Final question. Someone has Reece James. I mean, we've kind of covered this when we talked about defenders, but. He wants a Reece James replacement because, understandably, it looks like Hudson-Odoi might be playing right wing back for a bit.
I still think Luke Shaw's a good option.
Yeah,
I've said it a lot. Like United aren't that solid at the back, but he does get very far forward a lot. I know he was rested the other day, but I just think that was to give Tellers a run around. He gets so far forward. He's on set pieces. He could easily get an assist here and there and a couple clean sheets. United fixtures are all right. So I think he's only 4.8. I think he's a really good option. But he's yet to kind of get a big return. But he's got it. He's from watching him play, I think he's got it in him.
So Luke Shaw says, I'm going to put mine as a Palace defender. I don't know which one because they changed their back four. Maybe Nathaniel Clyne, he got man of the match. Because their fixtures are good, and I think you should fix the chase with defenders as opposed to any other position because it's fixtures they take clean sheets.
Yeah, I really like James Justin. I think he's a really good player and he's cheaper than Reece James. I also really like Matt Target. I don't know why so many people are sleeping on a Villa double up because they've been getting so many clean sheets. So yeah, Target or Justin.
Maybe Koufal. Oh. There's someone we haven't spoken about all season is Aaron Cresswell. And he was 5.0 at the beginning of the season. And he's the highest scoring defender. And I don't know if 5.5 is too expensive, but...
Yeah, I think it's just that bit too much, isn't it, for West Ham? If you got him when he's five, you're laughing because he takes corners and stuff. He also doesn't play as a... He plays as a left side centre-back as well. So it's confusing how he gets so many points.
He's on corners and stuff, but yeah, I think 5.5 is a bit too expensive. If you're lucky, if you've had him for the season, but yeah, Koufal,
Dawson seems to he's got a knack for scoring goals. Dawson.
Yeah, but I'd say that in 3 game weeks' time, because it's quite difficult to get rid of those sorts of defenders. But in 3 game weeks' time, West Ham are going to have Spurs, then Man City, then Leeds, then Man United, then Arsenal.
Yeah, but their next 3 games are Villa, Fulham, Sheffield. So
yeah, Villa will score against West Ham.
Yeah, 100%. I'm going to bench Koufal.
Yeah, fair.
All right. We've answered the questions. We've discussed this is a very fancy heavy podcast. No room for banter because it's a Sunday, and we've not had any beers, so we're not getting leery, which is probably the joy of some of you. But we'll be back again next Monday, where we'll be reviewing 2 game weeks and looking ahead. Thanks so much for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.